Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. We have a very excellent segment we are bringing to you today. We are going to be discussing the NFL playoffs, predominantly the NFL playoffs, with Fox Sports reporter Jennifer Hale. This is going to be a tremendous segment. Of course, Jennifer is in the midst of some other big stories as well. She also covers the New Orleans Pelicans for Fox Sports Southwest. We'll be talking about that with her a little bit too. But again, predominantly the NFL playoffs. It's one of the biggest stories, obviously, of the moment. And it is something that she covers. She is a sideline reporter for Fox Sports. You can catch her every week during the regular season. The crew with, I believe, Chris Myers and Rondé Barber. She's been working with them all year. And so she has seen all of the teams in the playoffs, at least on the NFC side. On the AFC side, I'm sure she has some thoughts as well, and perhaps has covered some of the four teams in some of the interconference games that Fox Sports covers. We'll ask her about that, if she's seen any of the four teams playing still on the AFC side. I have the sense that if any of the teams that might perhaps have been Baltimore, but we'll ask her about that as far as AFC teams that she may have gotten a chance to cover this year. And I see that she's on the phone line. So, just to reset, welcome everyone to FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 506. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here on the show where nothing is off topic. We always love talking to interesting people about interesting subjects. And today, we are two for two, talking predominantly NFL playoffs. A few other things as well with some of the different areas that she covers, but predominantly NFL playoffs with Fox Sports reporter Jennifer Hale. She also, of course, works for Fox Sports Southwest, covering the New Orleans Pelicans. Also works for WVUE, Fox 8 in New Orleans. She is the author of Historic Plantations of America's Black Belt. She is a multiple-time Emmy, Edward R. Murrow, and Associated Press Award winner. You can, of course, find more about her at her website, jenniferehale.com, and you can find her on Twitter at jenhale504. So that's Jen with one N, Hale, H-A-L-E, 504, at jenhale504. And it's a pleasure to welcome her to the program. We look forward to doing this segment. It's so great to be able to bring her on, the one and only Jennifer Hale from Fox Sports. Jennifer, welcome to the FDH Lounge. How are you tonight, ma'am?
I am wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. This is a real treat.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun to talk to you. I've been really looking forward to doing this. And I have to tell you, in the course of my research, one of the things that popped up here, now, I am not a gamer, so when I think Jennifer Hale, I tend to think of you, as I think do probably most non-gamers out there. But, of course, as you well know, I'm sure, you share that name. That name was coming up all over the Internet for voiceovers for video games. Do you ever get the mistaken identity of the on the Internet there where somebody will reach out to you and, hey, Jennifer, I loved you in Blood Skull Crusher 3. You know, do you ever get that sense of people reaching out to the wrong Jennifer Hale?
I sure do. It's actually become a long-running joke. I have never met the other one, but I have certainly sent many people her way and vice versa. She's done a lot of incredible work. She's done voices for everything from kids' cartoons to, like you said, the gaming and different movies. And she's from Canada, so we probably couldn't be more different.
Yeah, very interesting that I came across that there. And, yeah, I'm not surprised that your paths have somewhat kind of crossed and you two sending people each other's way, because the odds of two prominent people sharing the same name like that really is kind of interesting. But, again, with everything going on with you, with covering the NFL, definitely wanted to talk to you about the playoffs this year. I'll start by asking, because I know that you've probably seen a good chunk of the teams in the NFC firsthand this year. I'm sure you get on a handful of interconference games per year. Any firsthand coverage this year with Baltimore, New England, Denver, or Indy?
No, I have not seen those guys except on television. But I've seen Green Bay, I've seen the Panthers, I've seen some Dallas, and I'm looking forward to a great weekend of football. My goodness, there's just some awesome matchups coming up and so many great storylines as well. You know, from the weather to injuries to rematches, Peyton versus Luck, it's going to be a great weekend.
Well, there are a lot of storylines, certainly, and after what was, in a lot of ways, I think, kind of a lackluster opening weekend, they had the barn burner game at the end. I guess let's start there before I get into this weekend. Your thoughts on the call/non-call in the Dallas and Detroit game? It has sent, of course, conspiracy theorists into overdrive everywhere about that. The NFL has admitted the obvious, which is that it was a bad call, and they're asking us to believe there was nothing more to it than that. But what were your thoughts watching it? Everybody said it was kind of exploding collectively as we were all seeing what was happening there.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy to watch it unfold. I had Detroit four different times this season. So just because of that familiarity and getting to know Jim Caldwell and his staff and his players, you fell for him because, yeah, that vanishing flag was just, you just shook your head and went, what? I don't believe in a conspiracy theory. I do think because of the pictures of Dean Blandino on the Cowboys bus preseason and all, I think it lent itself to that even more so than most controversial playoff calls. So it was a lot of fodder, a lot of fun for everybody to try to piece this together in their own minds and come up with different theories. But I don't think that it was a purposeful, hey, let's make sure the Cowboys get in. My goodness. They have been a long-suffering team for this, that's for sure. Joe Lombardi knew in his offensive coordinating skills there in Detroit, and I'm sure there are some moments they want back, perhaps that punt on fourth and one. Let's go there for starters.
Yeah.
But I certainly think the Lions have a bright future and have some really good pieces in place, and I think it's going to be awesome to watch this, what we're expecting at least to be a shootout between Tony Romo and his Dallas Cowboys versus Rodgers and the Packers, if they can hold up under the wintry weather conditions at Lambeau Field.
Yeah, that is really going to be a spectacle there. With you having covered Detroit, as you said, a quarter of their schedule this year, I want to go back and ask you about something there, because Troy Aikman said something early in the game, and I described it to a friend of mine the other day. It was kind of a head-scratcher, but it made sense when you thought about it. When they were up 14-0, it was like, you know, this is the first time they really put it all together this year, offensively, defensively, you know, and defensively. I don't know if they were overachievers, but there's a reason Terrell Austin's going to be up for head coaching jobs out there, because they did a lot more than anybody thought they could do. I don't know if that's overachieving or just getting the most out of them. Offensively, they were underachievers. So you think about it, it's like they went 11-5. How is what Troy Aikman said right? And then you reflect on it, like, he's absolutely right. They managed to go 11-5 with only fleeting moments during the regular season of putting it all together. From your perspective, how was that possible?
You did. You saw these flashes of brilliance this season, and then they just seemed to give it away. I mean, there were games where they couldn't get a field goal to go when they needed to. Stafford, he may have the best arm as far as strength in the NFL, but he doesn't have that laser precision yet that we see out of, say, a Rodgers or a Manning or a Drew Brees. He's also had a lot of different offensive systems to learn and change. He really seems to be gelling well with Joe Lombardi. You know, you mentioned I'm from New Orleans, so I got to work some with Joe when he was a quarterback coach with Drew Brees, and just watching how he works, the system that he's implemented. He had Stafford drilling footwork. He really wanted him to be more elusive and more mobile in that pocket. So I think the Lions are going to be a force to contend with. I know they wanted to see this go a little bit further this season, but I certainly don't think they've played their best football yet by any stretch. So if you want to say underachieving in that sense, I do think they're a team on the rise is how I would describe it.
Yeah, there's not a lot of teams out there, 11-5, that have room for growth. In terms of just what they did from the previous year. But, yeah, when you look at especially what they did offensively this year, it maybe doesn't match an 11-5 team. So there is reason to think that they can get better on that side of the ball. And in terms of the team that beat them, Dallas, that looks to be, again, going in the best game of the weekend as it was last weekend. Again, the other three games, nothing really to write home about. And perhaps that will be the case this weekend as well. We'll get to the other games there. But Dallas Green Bay looks to be very interesting for a number of reasons. Ice Bowl 2, if you're just looking at kind of the surface of it here, what the conditions are likely to be. I have kind of keyed in a little bit on, I've been a little critical all year of Green Bay as far as the run defense, and that they haven't really been as stout as, again, perhaps their record might indicate, and that they haven't really been called on that all that much. And Dallas certainly looks like a team that can exploit that. So, again, they look to be the most evenly matched teams on paper, and certainly Vegas, I think, would say that going into this weekend. What are your thoughts on that game, and what might be some of the scenarios likely to play out?
Yeah, I agree with you. I had Green Bay actually against Tampa week 15, the Aaron Rodgers damaged that ankle and calf. So, wow, are they glad he had a bye week to rest up? We'll see how healthy he actually is, you know, how much did that week really help him or not. And I think your point about the run defense is an excellent one, because in those cold conditions, I know the players always say, doesn't change anything, it doesn't affect me, I'm tough. But those temperatures that cold have to, you know, and Green Bay is going to be better suited for it, I think, than Dallas, the Dome team. But I think the run game is going to be very critical. And gosh, DeMarco Murray has just been doing a great job out there. Dallas right now, number two rushing offense. That's going to be a fun battle to watch. I do have to admit, as important as the run game is going to be and the X factor, I can't wait to see the shootout between, at least the shootout I'm expecting, between Romo and Rodgers. When you look at this, you know, they're both so good in the fourth quarter. They're both so good in those last 2 minutes. They're clutch there. I think it's going to come down to the wire and be a thrilling one to watch. And when you look at some of the stats, you know, Dallas 8-0 on the road, whereas the Packers are 8-0 at home. There's just a lot of fun storylines for this one. And I think everybody wants to see, hey, does Tony Romo have what it takes? Is Aaron Rodgers as good as they say? Again, I do think it's going to come down somewhat to health for him and that ankle. He's a warrior. He'll battle through. He won't say anything, but he'll say it with his play.
Absolutely, yeah. There are a lot of big-time athletes that are going to be performing in this one. And, again, the hands-down favorite to be the most compelling game of the weekend. The one that obviously on paper is least compelling, also unfortunately on your network with Seattle hosting Carolina. Somebody was going to be the cannon fodder coming out of that god-awful playoff game last week between them and Arizona. Is there anything really – aside from the spectacle of this one and how bloodthirsty the 12th man might be and watching it on that kind of level to see complete and utter destructiveness, is there any other kind of scenario out there that would lead to any other kind of a game at this point in time based on how Seattle is kind of cresting and Carolina, again, hot down the stretch but didn't really beat a lot of great teams?
Yeah, their defense got it together as of late, but certainly not a powerhouse. That didn't. It seemed like no one in the NFC South could give it away this season. Just for the sake of argument, let me throw this out there. You know, Panthers narrowly lost to the Seahawks 13-9 at the beginning of this season. And at the beginning of last season, they played as well, and it was a narrow win. So, kind of ignoring the fact that of where they are right now, that the Seahawks seem to have gotten so hot as of late, at least when you look at game history, this one might be an interesting matchup if it's like the first time they met this season and the first time they met last season. Luke Kuechly, he is a battler. He's just such an outstanding middle linebacker, such an outstanding person. He's going to do his best to rally this team. Cam Newton, let's see, again, injury-wise after that car wreck. But he's a competitor. He's a fighter. I think he lives for moments like that when people say he can or people say he's down. So for Fox's sake, I'm certainly hoping that this is an interesting one. I'm hoping the Panthers defense still is continuing to get better and better and that they haven't played their best football yet and that they'll give Russell Wilson and that offense a game. I do think it's going to be a long day for Cam Newton against the Legion of Boom. We'll get another look to see how Kelvin Benjamin's doing. Can he, you know, play beyond his rookie status? Greg Olsen, just another one of my favorite players. I did a big story this past season on his son who was battling a heart condition, so got to know the family personally. And so in that sense, you know, I'm rooting for them. I hope they have a good day. I do think it's going to be tough, especially in Seattle. You know, being from New Orleans, I did my undergraduate work at LSU. before I went to Seattle, I thought, how loud can it really be? Okay, impress me. I've been in Tiger Stadium, Death Valley on Saturday night. Let me tell you, the 12th man's for real. That stadium's for real. It really does trap the sound. It's an imposing atmosphere. That's to say the least.
That definitely is the case. And in terms of Kelvin Benjamin, it'll be interesting to see if he provokes any kind of pro wrestling style promos from Richard Sherman after the game. Your colleague Aaron Andrews might be in for a sequel there. You never know. From last year. Yeah, that was really something. And Carolina season two was so weird. I described it recently on the program that it reminded me of my old scratch bowling days. Maybe you start out throwing like a 207, and then you bowl like a 121, and you come back with like a 206. I mean, I don't know what happened between the first two wins and the last four or five wins down the stretch, but I don't think we've ever seen a team make the playoffs with a donut hole season like that one. But
they
come in all shapes and sizes, don't they?
They certainly do. I tell you what, if for nothing else, the NFC South certainly made it interesting to see who would finally walk away with something this season. Ron Rivera is a great football mind. Thoughts and prayers go out to family. They had a fire at their home this week. Cam Newton had that terrible car wreck a few weeks back. Can this team use stuff like that for motivation, for an edge? Can they somehow spin an extra ounce of effort or two being on the road from those types of things? Who knows? Sometimes games come down to stuff like that.
One wonders, yes. Sometimes these things do provide a little bit of extra inspiration, and it will be interesting to see what happens there. It's interesting we talk about the storylines for this weekend's games, because I have the very cynical sense in the AFC that the media is trying to make us care. Like, oh, remember how competitive the Baltimore-New England series was a couple of years ago, and they kept meeting for the AFC Championship, and, oh, Manning versus Luck. But if for everybody like me that's saying, you know, it's going to be New England-Denver in the AFC Championship, as I was saying a year ago and was right, all the cynical people like me who are saying that this weekend's maybe just a speed bump to the Championship Sunday, do you see anything in either game that leads you to have any doubt on that?
Well, hey, you know, that's why you play the game, because you never know. I'll throw this out there. The Ravens have had great postseason success. They get hot in the playoffs. They win a lot. They won two at Gillette Stadium. They've won five in a row overall. So I'm not ready to write this one in yet and say it's most certainly the Patriots and Tom Brady. They had some early struggles and early troubles at the beginning of the season. They did seem to correct that O-line is better. The running backs are getting the job done at a more efficient level. But you never know. That Ravens defense, Terrell Suggs, can he get his group going? Can they sack and pressure? Certainly the fact that it's in Gillette Stadium, it's in Foxborough, that's going to be something in Brady's favor, in the Patriots' favor. But I'm not ready to say this one's a shoe-in yet. I think that's why you play the game. And I think out of the two AFC matchups, I think this is the one where there's the best chance for an upset, to be honest with you.
I would agree with that, and that would really be something if it led to a Denver-Baltimore AFC championship game after the huge upset in the playoffs 2 years ago. The chance for Denver to go back to the Super Bowl with that on the line, with it in their own stadium, and basically relive that whole thing potentially. That would be pretty fascinating. Also on the subject of football, and you mentioned your LSU background, my dad is an Ohio State alum, so I have been privileged to get to a number of games over the years and a fan there. So I have to ask you, is the whole SEC hangover in that part of the country kind of fading, or is it still just a real kind of bitter lump about being left out of the championship game for the first time in about a decade?
Yeah, it is a very odd feeling. Well, first of all, congratulations to your Buckeyes on the win of the Super Bowl, and good luck in that national championship. As far as SEC feeling, hey, look, the South, it's going to take a lot more losing before the South ever thinks the SEC is not the dominant conference in football. I think if you ask 9 out of 10 sports fans down here, they would tell you, hey, we beat each other up all season long. You know, it's that's why to play in the SEC is so tough and so difficult. From my LSU Tigers, my little Tigers this year, actually, you know, they were just so young. You had so many freshmen and sophomores. So I'm really excited about next season when they've had some time under their belt to mature and they've been able to work work into the system a little bit better. Waiting to see who declares for the draft. I know they were talking to several guys, hoping to keep him around for one more year, and that would certainly help. So fingers crossed that actually happens. But best of luck to them if they decide to go, because I know you have to do what's best for you financially, and we certainly understand that decision. But no, I think most sports fans here would say the SEC is still the most dominant conference in the nation, and that this year was just another example of beating each other up game in and game out, Saturday in and Saturday out, and next season will be a different. And a lot of folks are still scratching their heads about that game for Alabama. You know, they seem to be in a great spot that first half and then just kind of imploded down the stretch.
Absolutely, yes, and I accept your congratulations. Thank you, although I am an Ohio Bobcat, but I'm a Buckeye fan because of my dad. So, I'm very psyched about the way that played out. Yes, it was an unbelievable game. It really, really was. And, you know, the way it played out with the larger New Year's Six, you know, there's a lot right now, and I'm sure you're hearing it, a lot of what I would call revisionism about the SEC West. Like, how good were they really, if you look at it? You know, but I think you're right that they basically just kind of beat each other into paste, and then, you know, not everybody was up for the games there. Ole Miss and Mississippi State clearly weren't up for their games. So that doesn't change your opinion about the way the SEC West played out during the regular season, does it?
Correct, yes. Now, I do certainly think personally that there are some other great football programs outside of the South, outside of the SEC.
Yes.
But I do think when you look at the strength of schedule and you look at the beating these guys put on each other week in and week out, it does make it tough. There were no easy matchups this year. You know, everybody was good for a long time. They started to fall off, you know, as we worked our way through. But those first 6-7 weeks, I mean, every game was, could this, you know, give us a conference winner? Could this be it? Could this be crucial when it all comes down to it? Because so many people were so good.
Well, just as a general, continuing to be an observer of the college scene, I'd like to ask you about this. This is sort of an ongoing thing that I've been asking people over a period of time. The next 2 years with the New Year's Six, the way that it's going to be, we're not even remotely ready for this, are we, of where this is going to play out with the big doubleheader on New Year's Eve? This is going to reshape American society, is it not? You're going to have everybody in Times Square craning their heads at the screens to watch the football there. Ballrooms across America should be pretty much desolate, because this doubleheader already, I think, has become just about probably one of the five top things on the sports calendar. Now to have it on New Year's Eve, what's that going to be like in your estimation in the next 2 years?
Yeah, you know, I think you're onto something there. Certainly, college football, people love to watch it. I cover the NFL and I love it, don't get me wrong, but there's just something about college football. Even if your team isn't in it, you love to watch. So I think you're right. I think a lot of folks are now going to be making New Year's Eve plans based on football games versus on what's the best party or what's the best city to go ring in the new year in. Although I have to tell you, my jury's still out on this whole new playoff system and the whole voting and the whole poll. I'm going to have to see a couple more years of how this works before I can give an opinion. I was very suspect of it in the beginning. And to be honest with you, I'm still, as I'm watching it unfold, going, okay, that's how that's going to work.
Yeah. It's a weird kind of work in progress. I will tell you, too, maybe this wasn't the nicest thing to do on my part, but I put together a recent snippet, best of segments from our show, and of about 3 or 4 years ago, Bill Hancock arguing with me, because I always wanted this system, not an expanded playoff, a 14 playoff. And Bill Hancock was arguing with me about, who's to say people are even going to go to the semifinals? It's going to hamper travel with the national championship game. Now he's turning around saying it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, and that's okay. I appreciate that. The man, you know, we all have to, you know, earn our paychecks. But it's kind of funny because the entire NCAA establishment was against us, as you know, a couple of years ago, and now the playoff is the greatest thing since sliced bread, Jennifer.
I'm not ready to call it the greatest thing since sliced bread, but I will very respectfully listen to your opinion, and maybe I will in a year or two. I'll call you up and say, you know what, you were right. I still, you know, I kind of scratched my head about how do you have bowls and the playoff system and the championship game. I'm curious to see, again, how that works out long term. And yes, if you know, Alabama travels well, Ohio State travels well. If you get schools that don't travel as well, will you see some lag in those New Year's Eve games or New Year's Day games as people wait for the championship? I think that's what we'll work out. We'll see how that works out as we go along. It's a great topic of conversation. It's something new to argue and discuss, and that's always fun.
It really is. It definitely is. There are two other things I wanted to pick your brain about as well here. I saw a great column on your blog about the subject of maybe the next best next guy to take the torch is the best player in the NBA, good old unibrow Anthony Davis, and a comparison of him to Tim Duncan, which is interesting because our FDH Director of Research, Nate Noy, when he was at Kentucky, compared him to Hakeem Olajuwon, said that, you know, everybody says that he's really raw right now, but I see the potential, and I've always given him credit for seeing the potential to develop beyond what he was, because let's face it, nobody was saying that about Nerlens Noel a year later. They were just saying he was a Patrick Putback guy, and Anthony Davis has transcended that, clearly. But again, for me as a lifelong Clevelander and Cavs fan, I'm in no hurry for LeBron James to pass the torch, but we always thought that when it happens, if it happens, well, it will, it happens to everybody. We always thought Kevin Durant would be the next guy, but being down there and seeing the teams in the Western Conference and specifically there in New Orleans, is there a chance Anthony Davis just leapfrogs everybody and becomes the next great player in the NBA, the best one?
I really think there is. And let me tell you, I wrote that comparison the day that the Pelicans and AD were playing the Spurs, Tim Duncan. I think there are a lot of different players. I've seen so many comparisons of him to various greats. And the thing that's so different about him, Rick, is this was a guy, most stars are identified early now. You know, they're told from 9 or 10, they're found in the AAU camps, and they're told they're going to be great. And this kid totally flew under the radar screen because he was short. He was 6 feet. He was a point guard. So he really developed his skills to run the floor, to handle the ball, and he was hungry. He didn't get all of that attention. And then, miraculously, he hits this growth spurt, and all of a sudden, everybody's like, who is this person? Where has he been for the past 5-6 years? So I think his skill set is so unique and different, and I think the way he came up and grew up, not to say that there aren't other hungry players, I don't mean to imply that at all, but I think his hunger is a different type. You know, his parents, great people, hardworking, blue-collar Chicago parents who sent their kids to a charter school. It was nothing fancy, that's for sure. He didn't have the bells and whistles, and he stayed so grounded through this whole process. And his parents go so many places with him. When he was traveling for Team USA over in Europe competing this summer, his parents were there. He's just such a great person off the court as well as on the court. And I think those different unique skills and different unique experiences make him hard to put into one little box and make him interesting to watch.
Yes, and as he continues to develop, as you said, because of the different skills that he brings to the fore, he's a fascinating guy to continue to watch develop. Last subject I wanted to get your opinion about, because of your background as a news and a political reporter, and again, you're a very incisive reporter, this last subject I want to ask about is not as pleasant as some of the ones that we've talked about tonight, but I want to get your take on this, what people are saying down there in Louisiana right now. With this Steve Scalise story coming out over the last week or so plus, we have seen the big relic from the 90s, David Duke, back in the headlines. And it's a thing everybody, of course, thought all of that was dead and buried. So I'm curious as far as whether it be the man on the street, what they've got to say, what you're hearing in the newsrooms. I haven't heard as much about this the last couple of days. So is it a thing of where it hit the news and it's kind of faded and people have learned just not to treat this seriously? Or is it something that could potentially become divisive again? What's your sense of this reemergence and the way that it's going to affect people this time around?
Well, I certainly think you'll see it come back up during re-election time, no doubt.
Yes.
That stuff always seems to have a way of popping its head back up.
Exactly.
As far as right now people's attitudes and thoughts in Louisiana, sure, Democrats, both sides, it's so partisan now. Both sides are always looking ammunition and always looking for, oh, what's the latest scandal? It's kind of why I became disenchanted with covering politics. I loved it for years, but I came to feel like, you know what? Everybody's going to make a mountain out of a molehill. We don't ever get to discuss the important stuff because everybody's blowing up every little thing they can. You know, Scalise's opinion of that or his explanation of that is, hey, I talked to any group who would listen to me. I was a Cub legislator, and I covered that group, that legislative group, when he was coming up, actually. The mayor of New Orleans, Paul Landrieu, was in the House of Representatives. Okay. Steve Scalise was in the House of Representatives. They were all Cub legislators back then. So knowing how he operated back then, yes, he probably would have gone and talked to a group of 10-year-old Boy Scouts anticipating when they'd be able to vote at one point or another. Mm-hmm. Does it look bad? Yes. Does it raise questions? Yes, of course. Sure it does. And it's something that needs to be vetted and asked. But it's not any huge scandal, at least in the Louisiana community. Now, how does it get, what else comes out and what does it get made into during re-election time? I think then it could become a different animal, and I certainly expect to see it again. He's risen to a point of power where they're going to, you know, come election time, you've got to be ready for that when you're in positions like that, that every little detail is going to be questioned quite thoroughly.
Exactly. No, and listen, and I share your sentiments because, you know, the times on this show, us being a show where nothing is off topic, when we do have discussions on stuff, I always prefer, I'm a policy guy, I always prefer when it's on that and when it's on substantive things and ideas as opposed to all the neener crap of the political spectrum these days. And so I share your frustration with that. And I'm sure, unfortunately, it's probably driven some other people out of covering the political business. But, you know, bright side being, you know, you've had the opportunity now to go in and, you know, do a great job with Fox Sports, Fox Sports Southwest. It's been a true pleasure to have you on, add you to our list of, we've got a number of people getting paychecks from Uncle Rupert who've been on with us. We've had great luck with that. Kenny Albert, 5 times, Sam Rosen, Liz Klayman, Eric Bowling. Have you ever crossed paths with Ellis Senecan, by the way? I know he's from New Orleans.
I have not had the pleasure. Kenny Albert,
okay,
of course. I've gotten,
yes,
to work with Sam Rosen actually this season. You know, it's funny, we all work for the same company, but we're all at different games, so we don't get to see each other very often except for seminar in the summer before the season starts. But Sam did do 2 games with us this year while Chris Myers was off doing some baseball. And, oh, gosh, you've got some great guests there. Those are just awesome guys and so much fun to talk to.
Oh, sure, yeah. We've always had great luck with News Corp, and I knew that this would be no different, Jennifer. I really appreciate your time. An excellent conversation, as I knew it would be, and we'd certainly love to have you back on to discuss things as time goes by. I appreciate having you on so much.
Oh, it's been an honor. Thank you for having me, and I'd love to come back anytime. Let me know.
Oh, thank you, Jennifer. We'll do that. I really appreciate that. Thank you for being on. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 506.